Folks, September is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, and there will be 988 Day at the Capitol in Baton Rouge on September the 8th. And joining us to talk about it is Sherrard Crespo, Vice President of External Affairs, Director of Prevent Child Abuse Louisiana, as well as the Louisiana Department of Health's Office of Behavioral Health. Sherrard, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be on with you.
Thank you so much for joining us. This is obviously a very serious issue, one that touches a number of families in Louisiana, and obviously a very important topic to bring awareness to. Tell us, if you would, what's going on in Louisiana as we look at the mental health crisis that moves across this country?
Well, you know, in Louisiana, we do have a fairly high suicide rate, which is quite a tragedy. But I think it's something that we are really, you know, facing head on, and that we are looking at suicide prevention not from a place of shame or that it is a bad thing, but from a place of celebrating, taking control of your brain and awareness of your own mental health. And really, by preventing suicide attempts, by helping people to understand that it is okay if you have thoughts of suicide and that there is help for you, that you can feel better and that it's okay that you're not okay. And that though you might be struggling with thoughts of suicide or your mental health, there is help and support out there so that you can keep yourself safe and we can actually lower those suicide rates.
I've read some things that say it's really not uncommon for folks to actually kind of think about it or contemplate it, but never really act on it, right?
Yes, that is extremely common. I mean, when we're looking at what we've learned through research with suicidologists and suicide theorists, it's predicted that about 86 to 90 something percent of people in westernized cultures like the U.S. will have some degree of a thought of suicide at some point in their mind. So, of course, not that many people are dying by suicide, although way too many people are. But it is extremely, extremely common and normal for individuals starting even from childhood all the way up into your more advanced years that you might have thoughts of, I don't care if I wouldn't wake up tomorrow. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't know if I can be alive anymore. And that's where those thoughts start. And it's okay to talk about that. In fact, it is so important and necessary to talk about that for your own mental wellness.
In the most simplistic form, I guess it's a manifestation of despair. You know, a lot of things, a lot of twists and turns in life, right?
It's so many different things. You know, it's kind of that we almost picture like suicide ideation or thoughts of suicide, as it were, is like this dormant, like tiny tumor in your brain. And there are so many internal or external factors that could cause that tumor to flare up and for you to really experience those thoughts, yes, of thinking that I can't do life anymore. And then that starts the suicide ideation process because of stigmatization with suicide, to where you might keep that to yourself because you don't want to be a burden on others or to feel judged. But then that's how that can allow those thoughts to take more control of your brain, can make you feel so isolated and so alone, and then can intensify that perception of feeling like you're a burden on other people. And that's when we get into a danger area, this cross section of feeling really intense pain from isolation, while also now your brain telling you that you're a burden on other people and people would be better off without you. And that really, it literally activates a part of our brain that feels physical pain. And that's how suicide attempts can happen. And it's so important that we address this stigma so that people can feel comfortable recognizing and coming forward and getting support when those thoughts are smaller, when that tumor is smaller, so that we don't get to this point of crisis where life doesn't seem doable anymore.
I guess it builds and it kind of feeds on itself, right? Where you get into this cycle that sometimes is, and I'm told sometimes it can be relatively easy to talk people through because they get in that cycle and they just can't process. I don't want to say the common sense approach, but they can't process a way out.
Yeah, absolutely. The way that those two sort of factors play off of each other, this feeling of being othered, this feeling of isolation, and suicide theory, what we call a thwarted sense of belongingness, it intensifies this feeling of pain and like you're different from other people, then that allows that feeling of like that you would be a burden on other people, that sort of dissociation and that twisted logic to get bigger and bigger and realer and realer. And those are really kind of the only two causal factors that one can link down to suicide death, is this thwarted sense of belongingness, the isolation, and this perceived burdensomeness. And it's such a tragedy because every single person alive, their death would devastate multiple people, numerous people. And you just can't see it when you get to that point of that suicide crisis moment where an attempt could happen. But you don't have to get there. And even if you're at that moment, if you're still breathing, there is always help. And 988 is a wonderful resource for that. We are truly able to de-escalate over 98% of our calls, and we get thousands a month.
A lot of in the mental health field, there's a genetic predisposition or connection. Do we see that relative to suicides?
You know, it is interesting because there are some genetic factors that could be considered correlations to suicide ideation, but nothing specifically causal. Like there's not sort of like a suicide gene, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But there are definitely things like, I believe it's your chromosome 17, which affects your serotonin recycle uptake, that could affect depression levels, which could be correlated to suicide ideation. There are other mental health diagnoses that can be correlated with intensifying suicide ideation or intensifying capability for a suicide attempt. And then there's a lot of social factors when we're looking at the way that families handle trauma, or even because of the stigmatization of suicide, has there been a loss, a suicide loss in this family or in this community where someone has now been kind of dealing with traumatic grief, but they haven't been able to get assistance for this very complicated traumatic grief. And that's where you can sort of see this generational cycle of suicide attempts, but it's not necessarily because you just inherited, you know, thoughts of suicide. It's just that it's so regularly occurring, and you might have compound factors that can intensify that ideation.
So when we think of suicide being a subset of mental health in a macro sense, what is kind of the state of the state of mental health and the mental health delivery system here in Louisiana?
Well, you know, I think it's something that is evolving, which is really important. I mean, when we were looking back even just, you know, a decade ago, mental health providers were not even as encouraged to be fluent in how to address suicide ideation, when it's essentially a potential co-occurring thought and distress for anybody who is struggling with their mental health in any degree. So I think we're seeing a lot bigger of a push for that. If you are a help giver, especially if you are a clinician of any sort, that you need to have training in how to address suicide ideation, minimum gatekeeper training, because that's what really can kind of affect someone's cycle of feeling like there is hope for themselves. It's like knowing that the first person I go to ask for help knows what to do. And I think that we have a lot of amazing therapists, and then also just advocacy resources, things like our American Foundation for Suicide Prevention in Louisiana, the Louisiana Mental Health Association, our peer initiative, and then of course 988 in Louisiana as well, which is kind of causing this great connection between advocacy, awareness, and then also deliverable services.
I remember, you know, it was decades ago, the starting of suicide hotlines, 988 and other, you know, others, successes. Let's talk about that. I hear that these services have been incredibly successful.
I definitely believe so. You know, at VIA-Link, we've had the privilege of answering suicide helplines basically since their inception around the year 2000. So prior to the launch of 988, you know, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline was 1-800-273-TALK for anybody who has heard of that number. And that number still works. But now you only need to remember the three digits, 988. But even just in my, you know, close to a decade on working with nonprofits that answer helplines and suicide prevention lines, I mean, they are a lifesaver because they are available 24 hours a day. So you don't have to wait until you are in crisis to utilize them. You can call 988 whenever you need to talk about whatever you need to talk about. But we are also there for that 2 a.m. when the crisis hits, or the work meeting that you weren't expecting and the crisis hits, the traffic, the test, the whatever that you weren't expecting. You have access to immediate support, someone who really cares, who wants to hear from you whenever you need it. And I think that's the biggest benefit that one can have, and especially for terms of supporting someone who is experiencing thoughts of suicide, because we might not be able to make everything better, quote unquote, but you're not going to have to go through anything alone.
We're visiting with Sherrard Crespo, Vice President of External Affairs, Director of Prevent Child Abuse Louisiana and Louisiana Department of Health's Office of Behavioral Health, and we're talking about Suicide Prevention Awareness Month in September and the 988 Day at the Capitol in Baton Rouge on September the 8th. Let's talk about September the 8th. What's going to happen that day?
Sure. So September the 8th, so 9-8 as the date, is 988 Day. This is the second annual 988 Day. The first one was last year. 988 was launched in 2022. So this year, Via Link, my agency, and the other nonprofit who answers 988 in Louisiana, LACG, with the Office of Behavioral Health, are hosting 988 Day at the Capitol. So this is just a time to get together. It is a free event. We're going to be outside in the formal gardens. We're going to have a few quick speakers. You're going to hear from your 988 agencies, at Via Link, LACG, hearing from the people that actually answer your calls, because not everybody knows that 988, though it's a national number, is a local service, and you're getting routed to local nonprofits that are in Louisiana and care about and understand what's going on locally here. So you're going to hear from us. You're going to hear from some great people like Mrs. Louisiana, Courtney Vicari. We've got the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, our Louisiana chapter being there, just learning about some of these wonderful resources and really coming together for mental wellness. We are also going to have vendor tables there with a lot of local agencies and resources who provide behavioral health support and advocacy in all different ways across the state. So it really should be a beautiful day of just coming together, recognizing and celebrating 988 and advocating and celebrating mental wellness in Louisiana.
Let me ask you one other question that I meant to ask earlier, and I don't mean to go back and forth on this, but I read an article that talked about how helpful the 988 or the suicide prevention lines had provided relative to certain kinds of medications that folks were saying that one of the side effects was actually suicidal ideations, and that a lot of patients had no clue that that was actually a side effect. Have you come across that, and have you heard that as well?
So I've researched this a bit specifically for when it comes to antidepressant use. I'm sure everybody's heard it when it's on the commercials and they have the really fast talking at the end that it can cause thoughts of suicide. And it's interesting the way that that works actually is that someone who has been having depressive symptoms that are so overwhelming that you do need medication to kind of help your brain balance, feel like you can go throughout your day, those depression symptoms might have actually been masking your thoughts of suicide. And even if maybe you were experiencing your thoughts of suicide, they seemed duller. And the symptoms of depression, by nature being depressed and suppressed, you don't have kind of the energy, the agitated brain energy needed for a suicide attempt. So when someone starts taking antidepressants and it lifts those depressive symptoms, the onset of that suicide ideation and even potential for attempt can come on really all of a sudden. So it's really important if for anybody who is getting on antidepressants for their mental wellness, and not a knock on antidepressants, they are definitely necessary for individuals experiencing depression. But it's important that your provider is talking to you about this is what it could look like if you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, and then knowing what to do, because that's really important too, to know that you're having thoughts of suicide, but where do I go with this? And of course, again, 988 can always be your entry point and your person that you can talk to.
Yeah, and that's why I brought it up, because 988 is going to, you know, those folks are so well trained, and they know a lot about all of this, right? and they do it with compassion, and they're consistent in the way that they do it, and you have the appropriate protocols in place.
Absolutely. Our specialists who work on 988 go through about 200 hours of training. We have a wonderful in-house clinical staff. I have the privilege of being a part of it. We are always updating and maintaining our training on suicide response for best practice, and also evaluating what's actually working. Are we still helping people? Are we still de-escalating calls? Are these techniques working? Really explaining a lot about suicide theory to everybody who works for us so they understand why we use certain approaches, so that nothing is coming off robotic or scripted, so that we can have actual conversations. So you really are reaching people who have a level of study when it comes to suicide theory and how to respond to suicide. That can be more than a lot of people who even might have, you know, master's degrees in behavioral health subjects, because we just don't always have that specific focus on the suicide response.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us. September the 8th is 988, Monday, September 8th, 988 Awareness Day at the Capitol. And we really appreciate all the work that you do. Sherrard Crespo, Vice President of External Affairs, Director of the Prevent Child Abuse Louisiana, Louisiana Department of Health's Office of Behavioral Health. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. This is Newell on WWL. So, folks, you've heard me talk this week quite a bit about whether or not jurisdictions should be willing to accept the help and the offer that has been made by the Trump administration of federal assets and resources, whether that be military and or law enforcement individuals that work within the federal construct. And what's made the news here recently has been Chicago and what's going on there. And most recently, the Chicago Labor Day weekend had 7 dead. I think it's up to 8 now. 52 wounded in shootings as well. As to whether or not this is a manufactured crisis or not. And I happen to see P. Ray Easley, founder of Chicago Red. She is a Project 21 ambassador and a political abolitionist and hostess of Black Excellence Hour on a radio station in Chicago, where she's been working to move Black Chicagoans to the right and maybe exhibit a little common sense about law enforcement and how this works here. And she joins us now. P. Ray, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me this afternoon.
So I listened to you the other day. You had a very commonsensical approach to all of this. Tell us about the reaction of your mayor and your governor to this offer and your thoughts.
So we have to remember that our mayor represents the Democratic Socialists of America. They are the people who got him going through the Chicago Teachers Union. And so they're functioning off a different type of politics. They, meaning the Chicago Teachers Union, has been going down to Venezuela for at least a decade, building relationship with people, and honestly what I believe is passing out promises and maps on how to get to Chicago. And so because they've already told these people that they would be able to come here and live freely, they're doing everything that they can to maintain them while they're here. And that includes making law so that the Chicago Police Department cannot assist ICE, telling the Chicago public school children that they should be afraid of ICE when my child is not an immigrant at all. They're just doing a lot of things to align themselves with this movement, which is kind of weird because we all know it, across the country, that it was the cartel who trafficked them to Chicago, and Chicago is the headquarters for many factions of the cartel. So it seems like there's something bigger going on here.
What is your reaction to the mayor when asked directly by members of the media about this assistance and whether or not human capital matters, whether or not boots on the ground matter in Chicago, just the unwillingness and the deflection that goes on with every question? He's not willing to talk about it at all.
Well, again, because he has a script that he's following, this is a plan that they have in place when they decided to run him for office. And so they're sticking to the plan no matter what. What type of mayor would think that it's okay to publicly attack the president of the United States to the detriment of the citizens of your city when you have to be reelected? It's really strange that they have all of this time and energy to dedicate to people who do not have Social Security numbers. But here I am, an eighth generation American, and everything that I get in this city requires ID and Social Security numbers and residency. It is absolutely asinine, which is why we're very excited that the National Guard is coming here to help us manage this cartel problem, because this is going to be more of a military operation, I believe.
And what's this move by J.B. Pritzker, the governor there, the state of Illinois, walking around in neighborhoods that, you know, the significant reduction in crime that's occurred there, but where the shootings are occurring, he's not walking in that neighborhood.
He went to Little Village, and Little Village is actually the headquarters for the cartel in North America. So there are lots of shooting and killing going on there. A lot of the shootings that happened this past weekend was in that neighborhood. However, again, they're trying to push the message that we don't want the feds to come here, because once the feds arrive, they're going to uncover some really heinous crimes that are going on, and they're going to be held responsible for it. So they're trying to play this missile game with the public to say, oh, you guys don't want them here. We don't need these people here. But I'm getting calls from people who are saying, please, we want them immediately. We're tired of the drug trafficking. We're tired of the murders. We're tired of human trafficking. We're tired of our children not being able to play outside because they don't know whether or not someone's going to shoot when we're in the city where the majority of the shootings go unsolved. So if you have an issue with someone in Chicago, if you shoot someone, there's a very high possibility that you could get away with it. So there's no deterrent to crime. So if we're going to get some help to solve the crime, then let us get the help.
If you had to assess the overall feeling of Chicagoans relative to more police on the streets, where do you think that would break out?
They would say, you would see overwhelmingly that Chicagoans want more police on the street. Again, we deserve safety and security just like everybody else. But Chicago has become so synonymous with crime and death that people think that we just see this as a regular thing. And it's kind of strange because the day that the president of his assassination attempt, I was with members of the campaign here in Chicago, and they were crying and they were very upset. And I was just kind of sitting there. And they said, you're not upset, Patricia. And I said, well, he's alive, right? They're like, yeah. I'm like, does he have tubes in him? They're like, no. I'm like, okay, then he's fine. They're like, oh, my God, you are so Chicago. Because the president just got shot, and you're just like, oh, he's fine. Because we have to get used to this. We have to train our brains to deal with this trauma. And this is the United States of America. Nobody should have to live like this. So, yes, we want all of the help that we can get to some level of normalcy in this city. We are the third largest city in America. We deserve order, please. So we're very happy that President Trump heard us, and we look forward to waving American flags as the troops march down the street.
You know, it's interesting. It's free help. You are one of the few folks that I've been able to listen to that actually looks at this financially as well. I think you make the observation that the citizens of the city of Chicago are some of the most taxed citizens in the country, and yet the demand for services are not met. They go unheard, and it seems as though the mayor there just deflects, denies, evades, and then attacks you as a taxpayer and citizen.
Correct. So we live in the same neighborhood, and we kind of know each other because we're all kind of in the same social circle. He's a little older than me. But I say that to say that, yeah, these are the games they play. So I get messages through the neighborhood letter like,
oh, please, you know, slow down with Brandon, or could you stop? What do you want? How can you stop this? I'm like, guys, this is a serious matter. Brandon obviously is not here for us, but he's using the social capital of us being this great village on the west side of Chicago to justify what he's doing. They want to put a black face on this immigration issue, and we are not immigrants, New Orleans. Our people are from Louisiana and Mississippi, just like yours. So none of this has anything to do with us. But they want to try to use our trauma to say, oh, well, we're in some united fight against the American white male. And we are not. We are American people, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And right now we're in the middle of an invasion. So we are trying to stop this invasion because 90% of the heroin in this country is trafficked right off the heroin highway, which is on the west side of Chicago, which is the Chicago Loop, which means that if you know people who have died from heroin overdoses, it was probably trafficked from where we are right here. Help us stop this so that we can have more Americans live instead of burying their loved ones.
How many families do you know and come in contact with that, you know, or have had an overdose in their family? I hear that on the west side of Chicago, this is a daily occurrence.
People are overdosing daily. I have friends who have overdosed and survived, those who have overdosed and died. Because when you are the epicenter of drug trafficking in North America, that means that you have all types of drugs. We have drug tourists who come here, people that you meet outside and are like, oh, I just caught the train here from Wisconsin. I heard you guys got the best Mac in America and you're very kind people. So as long as I have money, people will be kind to me. They'll feed me, make sure I'm okay, and then I can go back home. What does that look like for the safety and security of the people who live here? We don't deserve this. We don't deserve to tell our kids, oh, that person's overdosed, and remember, don't do pills, or they're shooting because they're in some type of drug trafficking war on the streets in broad daylight. This is America. Nobody, this is abnormal. It's completely abnormal, but the mayor is focused on maintaining the sanctuary status of our city over really getting to the root of this crime, and that's drug trafficking.
I thought I heard you quantify the number that was spent by Chicago relative to that. Am I correct?
So the city of Chicago, right, when you mean spent, you mean supporting the migrants?
Yes.
Yes. The city of Chicago spent $637 million on them last year. Currently, the city is $1 billion in the hole. The Chicago public schools are $739 million in the hole at this very moment. The state of Illinois spent $2 billion on health care for them. Our governor just the other day signed a bill that allows illegals to get financial aid in the state of Illinois to attend universities, which means the FAFSA forms must be obsolete, because if they can get financial aid without a social security number, so should everybody else. So there's every day, it's a new trick. It's another way to give an invoice to the taxpayers of the state of Illinois to support people from the third world who decided to come here illegally. We can't afford that anymore, sir. So this is why they have to go. This is why we're standing with the president, because if we're going to spend this extra money, it has to be on this literacy crisis that we're dealing with right now. That's what we want to deal with, or the crime amongst ourselves. We have to figure out how to solve our American problems before we take on anybody else's.
Yeah, it's interesting. You're one of the few that connects all of these things together, and doesn't, you know, you don't address it in each individual silo, because I, like you, believe that they're all interconnected, because it all comes back to the prioritization of issues, right, as to whether or not we are a poor country. We have 40-something million people that live below the federally identified poverty level. And if we're going to have an immigration policy, why would we want more poor people, right?
Exactly.
I mean, because that puts everybody at risk, right?
Yes, I totally agree. And that's why we have to, one, as a nation, especially within my community, start having more conversations about the middle class rather than the lower class. Because although we have a high number of people who are living impoverished, the majority of Black Americans in this country are middle class. and we can find that statistic everywhere. So instead of concentrating all of our social and political capital on the lowest, we need to start focusing on the middle. So that way the resources can be better distributed and we are not making ourselves look low at all times.
This mindset of your mayor, Johnson, has that permeated throughout the criminal justice system in Chicago?
Oh, absolutely. If you, oh my God. So they have what's called the Safety Act here in the state of Illinois, and that means that there are only certain crimes you can be detained for. Let me tell you a couple of crimes that people were not detained for. They found an American woman named Megan Boss in Lake County, Illinois, in a vat of acid where her body was being dissolved by an illegal immigrant from Mexico. He goes to court. The Lake County court charged him with like concealment of a corpse or something like that. Because it's not a detainable crime, he got to go back home. So her mom had to go all the way to Washington, D.C. and get an audience with President Trump to tell him this story, and he sent ICE to go pick that guy up. He literally told her, watch what's about to happen. So that's what we're dealing with here. There, the way that we victimize villains in this state is absolutely deplorable. We need to really focus on making sure that the justice system gives justice to the victims rather than trying to so hard to make the villain the victim of the story.
Yeah, it's amazing. And we see that over and over and over again. And yet, as you point out, those that have been the taxpaying citizens of Chicago for a long time, and y'all have some high taxes, to say the least.
Sales tax are 10.5%. So you pay a dime on every dollar that you spend in Illinois.
Yeah, well, we can feel your pain because that's about where we are here as well down south. And you know, we fight for the same thing. We want the services. We want the potholes filled. We want our street lights repaired. You know, we want our red lights to actually work, our traffic control lights and so forth and so on. Well, best of luck for you. It's going to be interesting to see how this saga unfolds. What's your prediction?
I think that when the National Guard gets here, we're going to have a ball with them. Remember, Chicago is a city where the girls twerk on top of the police cars at the street parties. So we don't have a problem with the police. We have a problem with degenerates. And we are so happy that somebody's going to come and bring us some help. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you. P. Ray Easley, founder of Chicago Red. Best of luck to you. And thank you for spending time with us this morning. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you. Happy Thursday.
You too. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. So getting back to the issue, and we'll talk more about this with Raphael Goyeneche in the final hour here. There was an interesting article by that talked to a first assistant state's attorney for Cook County. His name is Robert Milan, and he helped drive a 2016 program. And he tells the story about Chicago leading the nation in the body count for more than a decade, and at the murder rate, though down from the pandemic highs, is still dramatically higher than both New York City or Los Angeles. And he also talks about, you know, this whether or not Chicago has a need for the federal troops to come in. Milan says it's purely political. Because it's Trump, we're not going to do it. So people are going to die. He added, a real leader would ask for help. He says that for just one weekend during Rahm Emanuel's administration, hundreds of extra police officers were deployed to neighborhoods in Chicago's south and west side alongside state police troopers and federal agents. He said that he and former U.S. Marshal James Smith cooked up a plan from another police saturation operation carried out in Chicago's K-Town neighborhood for about 2 months in the early 2000s, which resulted in no shootings during that period, and otherwise would have had dozens of shootings. They had wiretaps going on, so they were listening to the gangs and what they were saying, and they were saying, and I quote, we got to get out of here. 5-0 is everywhere. We can't do anything, he said of the 2000s operation, which was ultimately shuttered because of limited local resources. And when the city tried it again in 2016, it became apparent quickly, that is, that city coffers and police force still couldn't sustain the operation and that federal support would be required to continue. But for that one weekend that they did it in 2016, the crime rate in the city went down 41%. So it obviously works. Human capital matters. Boots on the ground matter. So Milan's asking leaders today, why not bring in the guard? If they're willing to do it for free, yes, we're experiencing a 45% reduction, but we're the violent crime capital of the world, much less the United States. Why not do more? And let's see what happens, and let's see where it goes. What do we have to lose? It's free. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we return after the top of the hour news break, we will visit with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll talk about the federal indictment of former OPSO employee Kenneth Lawson, updates on Mayor Cantrell's arraignment, and Bro's federal lawsuit. We'll also talk about the HUD restriction now on the mayor as a result of the indictment. And we'll talk about the National Guard possibly being deployed. That and more when we return with Rafael Goyeneche. Stay with us.